Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another pmlessonslearned.com conference call. This is one of our PM best practices call, and today is Thursday, February the 17th, 2011. This is our call that we hold once a month on the third Thursday for PM best practices. We also have calls on the first Thursday for our PMP study group for those studying for the PMP exam. And on the second Thursday every month, we have a call called our PM Job Shop call for those looking for career advice in their project management careers. This call is this call that started it all. Again, it's on the third Thursday every month. We discuss PM best practice topics, and sometimes we have project managers come on to share lessons learned. We also have a call once a week on Tuesday nights for those that are more serious in studying for the PMP exam. If you'd like to be part of that group, it's a virtual study group, and people take turns presenting on the material studying for the PMP. We have slides available ahead of time in our library that are used by that group. If you're interested, send an email to study@pmlessonslearned.com. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us. We just posted a new page on our website looking for volunteers to help us out. Of course, we're a totally volunteer group. We make these calls available to everybody at no cost to anyone. Actually, we have very few costs for our group because we use a lot of freely available technology that's available to us. So we're just a group of project managers helping project managers to make a difference. So I wanted to mention our call tonight. We've got a call about the six-step process to an effective work breakdown structure, the WBS. And our presenter tonight is Bill Duncan. Before I get into that, I wanted to mention that we have somebody special on our call, George Schrader. George, could you say hello there?
Hello, everyone.
Hello. George is actually, there's a good story behind George. It was quite a while ago when we started our PM Job Shop call, maybe at least 2 years ago. And George was on the very first call, and he was looking for a job, and we had somebody else that had a job available. The two of them got connected, and George was soon after that employed in that open position as a project manager. And before we started recording the call, George told us that he's still working in that position. How's it working out, George?
It's fantastic. I love the company. They're all about project management, portfolio management, program management. I couldn't be happier there. I love it. Was working at the Ford Sports Club. Yes?
George, you said your boss is on the call, too?
I don't know.
Sorry about that.
I think that's great.
He's standing next to me.
It's great that George is on the call, and he was one of our first success stories with the PM Job Shop calls, and with that call, we strive to help project managers in their careers. And that call is run by Scott Percival and also by Carl Reed. So please tune in on the second Thursday every month, and you might get very lucky, too, just like George did. Do you have anything else to add, George, before we go into our topic this evening?
The only thing I'd say is that I was brand new to the project management world. I had done some, but it was in the military, Being on the call and getting that job has really changed my life, so I just want to thank you for the opportunity.
Sure. It's really exciting to be able to hear your voice again because I remember your name. You know, you were surprised I remembered your name, but that was a very big success story for that call starting out a few years back. And now we've been able to add to our calls and have other calls as well, so we're growing.
And something actually, I'm very interested in this work breakdown structure because something that we're doing on our current project, and I just want to learn more about it. I mean, I've done it before, but I want to learn more about it. So I'm very excited for today's material.
Good, good. I wanted to mention to everybody, if you want to download the presentation, because some of you may be listening by recording or by podcast after tonight's call, if you go to our website at pmlessonslearn.com and you look on the left-hand side, there's a bunch of links there after all the telephone numbers for our calls, and you'll see on the left-hand side, you'll see a link for files and presentations, and if you follow that, there'll be directions there to download the presentation for tonight's call. It has today's date on it, and of course, it talks about the six-step process for work breakdown structure. So I was really happy that Dana is the person that runs our calls on, Dana Safford runs our calls on the first Thursday every month, our monthly PMP study calls. He found Bill Duncan, a presenter, at a class that he was going to, and we're really happy that Bill agreed to be with us this evening. He's recognized as one of the world's leading experts on the theory and practice of project management, so we're very happy and fortunate to have him volunteer his time for our group. You know, his training programs are learner-centered. He wants to ensure the development of useful skills in project management, and his consulting practice that he runs emphasizes doable and practical recommendations for real benefits for project managers and for projects as a whole. He's also the primary author of the first edition, the 1996 edition of the PMBOK Guide, the project management body of knowledge that I'm sure all of you have either heard of or probably read from cover to cover if you study for the test. The PMBOK Guide is put out by the Project Management Institute and is the basis for the PMP exam. Bill remains active in standards development today with both the American Society for the Advancement of Project Management, that's the ASAPM, and also the Global Alliance for Project Performance Standards, that's GAPPS. You know, Bill, we're really happy that you're with us this evening. Maybe if you get a chance this evening when we get towards the end in the Q&A section, maybe you'll tell us a little bit about these two organizations that you're involved with. Thank you very much for agreeing to speak to us and giving your time back to the project management profession. Why don't you go ahead and take it away, Bill Duncan.
All right. Thanks a bunch, Henry. I got three very quick administrative announcements. You may have heard that last little cough. I think I'm suffering from a little bit of a post-nasal drip, sore throat, whatever. You may hear me at some point during the call sound like I have something in my mouth. If it sounds that way, I do. I'll be sucking on some Hall's Mentholyptus at various points during the presentation, so please don't worry about it. Second thing I wrote myself from, oh yeah, Henry in reading talked about learner-centered. This presentation, because I don't really have the opportunity for you folks to do any exercises or really practice the stuff, doesn't fit that category. But we'll do the best we can to answer questions as we go. And the third point, if you're studying for the PMP exam, you probably want to forget everything that you hear tonight in terms of study preparation for the exam. The PMBOK Guide and the PMP exam are still, in my opinion, heavily slanted towards the DoD approach to work breakdown structure, which is more product-oriented and cost accumulation-oriented, really intended more for the buyer of services on a project than for the project manager himself. So what I'm going to be talking to you about tonight is targeted at the practicing project manager, somebody who really needs to get a work breakdown structure in place to be able to manage.
Thank you, Bill, for differentiating that, because that's a help for people that are studying for the PMP to understand that there is a difference, different types of WBSs that can be produced. You know, I wanted to mention, too, when you mentioned about technical things that need to be mentioned, for those of you on the call, I know a lot of you are used to this. If you push *6 to mute your phone, and then when you want to talk, you can press *6 to unmute, so it toggles it on and off. Sorry, Bill, I wanted to jump in and say that so that we don't have a lot of background noise.
Oh, no problem. I think we're hearing a lot of *6s, which is probably a good thing. I'm on slide 2 now. I've turned the animation off. If you actually have the PPTX file, you may have some animation. I thought we might be actually connected to the screen, so I turned it off to make things simpler. I'll just let you know as I go page to page. Just a quick review of the agenda. I want to talk a little bit about scope versus work first. This to me is a really fundamental concept in project management that I think a lot of people still haven't grasped yet. I also think it's something that the PMBOK guide does not address particularly effectively. If you've been studying for the WBS, for the PMP exam, what I refer to as scope is what the PMBOK guide calls product scope. What I refer to as work is what the PMBOK guide calls project scope. So I've kind of simplified my language a little bit, and I think it's important for you to understand that, I think, to really appreciate the WBS. Then we'll get into the WBS itself, basic concepts, just a couple of things, definitions to start. I'll review the six steps and then some lessons learned at the end in terms of my perspective on using the material that I've been talking about.
Excuse me one second. We're unable to see the presentation. Keep saying waiting for presenter.
We're not using the free C site. You'll have to go grab the PDF or the PPTX file from our Yahoo Groups site.
Okay. Will do.
If you're not sure how to do that, go to www.pmlessonslearned.com, and in the left-hand navigation column, you'll see a link for files and presentations. And just follow those steps, and away you go. Go ahead, Bill.
All right, so I got a little title slide, three, scope versus work. I'm going to just jump right down to slide four, which is headed scope versus work. I've got definitions here. My definition of scope is the characteristics of the product of the project. My definition of work is the actions that must be taken in order to deliver that product. Now, let me illustrate it in this fashion. I happen to be sitting in my kitchen. Has a lovely dark blue on the walls. At least I like it. Let's pretend that you've been contracted to repaint my kitchen for me. I have specified that instead of this dark blue, I'd like to go with a brighter color, and I've asked you to paint it red. Shortly after we've agreed on the particular color, on the contractual amount and so on, I've changed my mind because somebody told me that red tends to make people angry and irritable, so I have decided to paint my kitchen green instead of red. So I'd like everybody to stop and think for a minute. It's a very simple question. When I change the color of the kitchen from red to green, have I in fact changed the scope of my project? Well, let's think about that one for a minute. If you were here in person, I'd ask you to raise your hands. When I use this example in class, I would say typically at least a third, sometimes as many as two-thirds of the people in the class, will say, no, this is not a scope change. If you accept my definition, it is a scope change because the characteristics of the product of the project have changed. It used to be a kitchen painted red. It's now a kitchen painted green. Now, the next question is, has the work of the project changed? Now, people start to get a little bit confused quite often because they're not quite sure. And the correct answer to has the work of the project changed is the correct answer to every question in project management, which is it depends. If you're the contractor and you've already bought the paint, you may have to pay a restocking charge. You may need to go to the paint store an extra time to return the red paint and pick up the green paint. So the work that you have to do may in fact change. If you've already painted half the room already, clearly the work of the project has changed as a result of this scope change. The issue in being able to differentiate these two concepts starts to come in when you have more complex technology than painting a room. Very often your customer or client doesn't really understand and often doesn't care about the work you have to do on the project. Their focus is on the scope. They want to know that they're going to get a product, the service, result, whatever, that they will be able to use in business to serve their purposes, to obtain benefits, obtain outcomes, whatever term you want to use there after the project has been completed. So their focus is on scope, on the characteristics of the product of the project. As project managers, we tend to be more focused on the work. What do we have to do? And this is one of the places where we often get confused around the use of the work breakdown structure. Work breakdown structure doesn't define the scope. What it does is it defines the work. I move on to slide 5, I've got a very simple project lifecycle there. Our project lifecycle defines scope-oriented processes. Here's a classic one that you might see in software development, going from requirements to design, development, and then turnover. If you were in construction, you might start with a feasibility study, go to design, construction, and turnover or transition. Some life cycles have 5 or 6 phases, some have 3. But the key here is that the project life cycle defines the scope-oriented processes. How are we going to go about finding out what we need to know about the product or the project so we can actually develop it? Moving to slide 6, this chart should look familiar to most of you. It's tweaked a little bit, and I'll explain that in a minute. But the project management methodology is to find the work-oriented processes. What you're seeing in front of you here is my redrawn picture for the process groups from the PMBOK guide. I've replaced initiate with approve. I think it's a little bit clearer. It's actually the term that we used in the exposure draft in 96. I've drawn plan, control, and replaced execute with accomplish. And I've drawn them as clouds rather than as discrete items in order to show that they overlap and interact, that this is not a discrete, simple flowing process pulling together eventually at the end in order to close in this case, the phase. Brings me into slide number 7, where you see bits of both charts pulled together, illustrating that we have our scope-oriented processes and project lifecycle, which are defining how we go about figuring out what the product of the project is. And underneath, we have the process groups or the project management methodology steps for repeating within each phase of the project. So I think a lot of people have interpreted the material in the PMBOK guide to suggest that initiation, planning, executing, and closing are phases. You get into a lot of trouble if you do that. Next two slides kind of overlap, trying to illustrate that our scope-oriented methodologies and our work-oriented methodologies work together. We can talk about them separately, but they are, in fact, complementary. What you see on slide 8, let me jump right ahead to slide 9 without animation. Slide 8 may not make a whole lot of sense. What I've got color-coded in blue in the row there is the scope-oriented activities, and in the orangey color, I've got the work-oriented activities down below. And what you see here is if we start with the business need at the very beginning of the project, we need to put together a plan of some kind that will tell us how we will go about preparing a requirements document. Once we have the requirements document complete, the requirements phase is complete, we'll then use that information to either create a new project plan or an updated project plan, depending upon your point of view. It will tell us how we go about preparing the design document. And this interaction between figuring out the what of the project and the how continues on through the remainder of the phases as well. Next slide, slide 10, shows a couple of things, again, color-coded to scope and work. I'm going to skip the project definition and the project success criteria here. Those are activities that we would do in planning the project prior to preparing the work breakdown structure. The project definition document tells us what our key deliverables are. It allows us to understand a little bit more about scope for this particular phase of the project. Project success criteria address how we're going to determine whether the project was managed successfully, and how our customer or client will evaluate whether or not the product that we delivered was in fact useful to them. And once again, the orange or beige colors are oriented towards work, and the first step in figuring out what you have to do and how much it's going to cost is the work breakdown structure. So that's where we're going to go to next. Slide 11, I guess it is the title slide for the module on work breakdown structures. If you look at the quote on that, if you can see it, Abram was a general in Vietnam, for those of you old enough to remember. This is actually his comment about winning the war in Vietnam, so you may want to take it with a grain of salt. But fundamentally, that's what we're looking at with the work breakdown structure, is breaking down the work, breaking down the elephant of the project into bite-sized chunks so that we understand better what it is we actually have to do. slide 12 is a definition for work breakdown structure. You can see in the first line there, the words that are emphasized, a structured definition of the work, hence the term work breakdown structure. And I've listed in the first two bullets there just kind of a reminder of what the work is. Everything we have to do to produce or create the product of the project, and everything we have to do to manage the work of the project, which means our WBS should, in fact, include all of the work and only the work. What I say to people is if it's not in the work breakdown structure, it's not in the project. If it is in the work breakdown structure, then that means it's necessary for the project. On slide 13, I've got kind of a conceptual view of a work breakdown structure, and I want to describe a couple of pieces of it to you here, because there's a little bit of heresy, or more gently, heterodoxy, if you will, here in terms of my view of the work breakdown structure. Before I get into talking detail about slide 13, I'd like to take just maybe half step back. My opinion is that the work breakdown structure is probably one of the best tools that we have for project management. And at the same time, it's also, I believe, one of the most misunderstood tools for project management. I believe that misunderstanding comes from two primary sources. The first source is that a lot of the original work on work breakdown structure, what was necessary, how to construct it, and so on, came from the construction industry, and specifically construction, not real estate development. So you will often see something in the book on project management that says the very first thing you do, or one of the very first things you do on a project, is develop a complete work breakdown structure. Well, if you're in the building phase of a real estate development project, you have a detailed set of plans, and you can create a complete work breakdown structure for that phase. But if you're at the very beginning of a real estate development project where you're not sure what you're going to build or where, if you're at the very beginning of a software development project, if you're at the very beginning of a research and development project, you cannot develop a complete work breakdown structure because you don't know all the things that you have to do. We'll see a little bit more of that as we go through the steps. The second piece is the US DOD picked up the work breakdown structure very early on, and their standard, I believe it's been updated, it was 881 or 881A for years and years, is product-oriented, and it's really more oriented towards allowing the government as the buyer to collect costs and to compare costs of similar weapon systems. So it is designed more for the owner of the project rather than for the individual, the project manager, who's actually doing the work. To illustrate or reinforce that notion, I once asked a fairly senior official in the Defense Department how this approach would work for developing a work breakdown structure for a feasibility study project. And he looked at me with a totally blank expression on his face and said, "Why would you want to have a work breakdown structure for a feasibility study?" So I think you see there the perspective that DOD has in their standard, which is we've already figured out the feasibility, we already know what we have to build, and now we're trying to define the steps in building or creating that product. If you're in a project that's doing feasibility study or gathering requirements before you know what it is you have to build, then the product-oriented approach to the DOD isn't really terribly effective. Coming back to slide 13, you'll see that I've got everything defined in terms of either deliverables or activities. A deliverable is a thing, and an activity is something I do in action. A couple of things that you'll see here in looking at this chart, you'll note that the different branches of the work breakdown structure have different numbers of levels. All branches of the WBS do not have to have the same number of levels. You'll also see that I have deliverables and activities mixed in some levels. Many writers on work breakdown structures say you can't do that or you're not supposed to do that, that you should have either all deliverables or all activities. And my question is always why? And the response that I've traditionally gotten is just because. So I don't think I accepted that answer when I was 3 years old from my parents, so I'm certainly not going to accept it at this point in my life. If you look at the middle branch in this chart, if I come down from I start on the right, I go from project down to the deliverable on the right, then the deliverable on the left, you got two deliverables below that. If you take the deliverable on the left, you'll see that next one there where it goes activity, deliverable, activity. Now, you could, if you wanted to, move those three activities at the very lowest level up and replace the deliverable. But sometimes it communicates better, or it's easier to see what's going on if you structure it this way. I'm a big believer in practicality, in doing things so that they are effective and useful for the project manager, rather than mindlessly obeying some rules. The other thing that you'll see is I use the term activities. Some people get very heated about activity versus task. My personal opinion is I could care less if you prefer to call them tasks or if you want to have tasks that are broken down into activities. I'm not going to lose a whole lot of sleep, but the key here is that the upper levels are normally, I think, properly defined in terms of deliverables or things. And the very lowest level, the one last level of the work breakdown structure, identifies activities that have to be performed. And I'll give you a little bit more on that later as well. Now, the next slide, slide 14, gives you the six steps. What I'm going to do is I'm going to run real quickly through all six steps, through the detailed slides. If you're following along, just give you a quick view of each one. And then I'll come back and go more slowly through them. If you want to ask questions on the second pass, you're more than welcome. The reason I do this is I tried for years to figure out the right order for presenting the various concepts of the work breakdown structure. And the problem is there isn't one correct order. Different people's brains work in different fashions. So in the last couple of years, I've just found it a lot more effective in teaching mode to give people the big picture first and then come back and do the details. So if I go to slide 15, we want to get the appropriate stakeholders in the room. Who are the appropriate stakeholders? Can certainly vary by project. Talking about that in a little more detail on the second pass. Step two, organizing the first level according to how the work will be done. I think there are three main approaches, either the project lifecycle or key deliverables, or the consultant's miscellaneous is the third one. If something other than the first two makes sense to you for the first level of the WBS, by all means, use it. And I'll show you an example of one a little bit later. Step three, we add a branch for project management. Remember, the WBS includes all the work that we're doing, so it has to include the work that we're doing to manage the project as well. Then we generate additional detail. We can do this top-down or bottom-up. Basically, the question that we're asking is, as you see here, what are all the things we have to do, documents we have to produce, and so on. Next step is to arrange the things we've identified into a hierarchy. You see here a child has only one parent, and then the key thing here is the lower level items are both necessary and sufficient. Once again, more detail on that in a little bit. The last step is to do the editing. What I've found over the years is that people will struggle with what the name of a particular node in the work breakdown structure is. And the reason they're having trouble figuring out what they should call it is they don't really know exactly where it fits or if they have, in fact, described the item correctly. So if you wait until the end to do your editing, once you have all the structure laid out, it is usually a whole lot easier to see what the names of the individual items should be. On the next three slides, I have samples. First one is a classic systems software development project. Where we have phases at the upper level. That's one of the options I identified. So you can see requirements, design, detailed specs, and so on all the way through the process. The next slide, slide 22, shows a deliverable-oriented WBS rather than a phase-oriented. This is a classic structure when you have a single-phase project. If you look at this, all of the design work for the new bank logo has been done, and this is basically the implementation phase. So it's been broken down into the major deliverables, getting it on the printable electronic material on the fleet signage and so on. Slide 22 is my all other category. If the first two doesn't work, give this one a shot. And what you're seeing here is an office remodeling project where we are hiring somebody to do the work for us. So our work breakdown structure should be describing the work that we have to do, not the work that the vendor has to do. So you see the vendor selection process up here at the top. All right, I'm going to go back to slide 15. If anybody wants to hit their star 6, I think Henry said it was, to ask a question as we go, feel free. So I'm back on slide 15 again, the first step. Getting the appropriate stakeholders in the room. Certainly the team members, certainly any subject matter experts. You do often need to know something about the work that you're going to be doing in order to, or the technology behind the work, in order to figure out what has to be done. Depending upon the size of your project, you may or may not want some contractors in. Depending upon who the customer, client, user, or owner, whatever the case may be, is, you may or may not want someone representing the customer involved in the room as well. Very difficult to give you a precise answer about who should be included. My sort of general rule of thumb is, if in doubt, invite somebody. The other thing to keep in mind as we go through this process is you may not be able to get the work breakdown structure completed in the first iteration. You may discover that there are questions. excuse me. So if you don't have the right person in the room, you put a holding spot in your work breakdown structure, and you go out and find the right person and come back and fill that in. I actually did some consulting for a client several years ago. This was a sponsor, or one of the main sponsors for the Pan American Games that were being held in Winnipeg back in, I don't remember, 1998 or something, I think. They were trying to figure out what they needed to do in order to support their sponsorship responsibilities. And we had started out with the intent of me facilitating the development of a work breakdown structure for this project, which was going to involve a huge number of volunteer hours over about an 18-month period. And what we discovered as we started trying to put the work breakdown structure together was that they simply did not have enough information to know what had to be done. So we backed off and basically put together a work breakdown structure for what I would characterize as gathering requirements. They went down to visit the Olympics in Atlanta, went and talked to a couple of other places to find out what had to be done, how much work was going to be involved, what the subsidiary deliverables were, et cetera, and so forth. So they actually had five or six people working together in the room for about 3.5 or 4 days to prepare a work breakdown structure just for the requirements phase of their sponsorship. So in this particular case, they had the right people for that first phase. They didn't have the right people for the later phases, and they expanded the work breakdown structure as they went. All right, I'm on to slide 16. Once again, with lots of work on work breakdown structures, you will see people saying, this is the right way to start out your work breakdown structure. You must put this at the top level, or you must put this at the top level. What I found is that most of those authors are attacking the work breakdown structure from a particular perspective, and they're not always sharing that perspective with you. So that if I'm a software developer, for example, there's a good chance that my most of the time I will organize by the project lifecycle phase. I'll go through requirements, design, development, and so on, and I'll have one project manager who's responsible for that. If I'm in engineering and construction, I will probably have a project manager responsible for the architectural work. I'll have a separate project manager responsible for engineering design. Once the architecture and engineering work is done, then I'll have a third project manager who's responsible for the actual construction. In that case, where I'm going through individual phases with a separate contractor, organizing the work by key deliverable often makes the most sense, as very often the deliverables from the phases are not the same. So putting the key deliverables at the top is best. And then once again, the third bullet here, some of the logical grouping. The first two don't work. Find something that does work for you. Moving on to slide 17. Moving back to slide 17, I guess. Adding a branch for project management, identifying those activities specifically, holding team meetings, filling out status reports, customer reviews, updating the plan, processing change requests. There is work that has to be done in order to manage the project, and that should be called out, identified, and planned just like any other work on the project. Step four, generating the additional detail. Generally speaking, if you understand the product of your project well, you can probably put a work breakdown structure together top down. You know what the pieces are, you know the work that has to be done, you can define it fairly easily. If it's something you haven't done before, generally speaking, a bottom-up brainstorming process will work best. That also is sometimes a test for how well you know the product of your project. If you are struggling with developing a work breakdown structure, it may be an indication that you don't know what you have to do as well as you thought you did. It may be appropriate to either go back and make sure that your requirements or design, or whatever phase you're in, are clear, or it may be useful for you to do a little bit of brainstorming, organize the work later on. Slide 18, putting stuff into a hierarchy. I strongly recommend the use of post-it notes for doing this. Some people do like to try and do it in an electronic fashion, have one person sitting at the keyboard and putting this stuff up on a screen. What I've found is that post-its gets people involved in a very physical fashion. Plus, it's very easy to move post-its around on a whiteboard, or if you've pasted some craft paper around the room. It gets people physically energized, more in control of what's being done. The tactile aspects of using post-it notes are very positive from a team-building perspective and very practical from the perspective of arranging the WBS. I moved on to slide 19. Excuse me. Repeating my message from before that you leave the editing and revising to the very last step. Typically, once you have the structure laid out, it is much easier for you to figure out whether this particular item is a deliverable or an activity, keeping in mind that anything you do on your project can be, typically be described as either a noun or an activity with a verb and a noun. So you want to know where it is in the work breakdown structure before you make those decisions. The third bullet, final bullet here on slide 19, is also important. We want to have enough detail to estimate. We do not actually estimate as part of the work breakdown structure, but that's one of our questions for asking ourselves, do we have enough detail? Have we gone down low enough on this branch, or do we need to go lower? So if, for example, we were planning an auction, and one of the activities in the auction was develop a marketing plan, if I had somebody that I had worked with on similar volunteer fundraising project in the past, and I could say, okay, what's involved in putting the marketing plan together? And he says, well, you know, we've done it a couple of times before. It's going to take 15, 20 hours, and I can probably get it done for you in 2 weeks. I'm comfortable. If I have not done this work before, the person who is doing the work for me has not done it before, then I might decide that I need more detail in order to figure out what's involved in that particular item. Now we're back to the examples.
Why is that taking a break? You're taking that. So just coughing there. Let me ask a question on the detail.
Sure.
When you try to figure out the how much detail you want to put in there, does that often force you to wind up going to maybe yet another level if you find what you've got right now does not have enough detail, or do you just add more information to what you currently have?
What I usually suggest to people is that they add the detail as part of the development of the work breakdown structure, and then they may decide later on as they're looking at the scheduling or the estimating work or the arrangement of the reporting that maybe they can collapse it later. But I would rather create the additional detail and then throw it out than try and get too much information onto a single post-it.
Okay, thanks.
Does that answer your question?
It does.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Slide 20, phase-oriented work breakdown structure. A couple of things to pay attention to. Here is that we do, in fact, have deliverables named at the top. So instead of saying requirements, it says requirements document to emphasize what's coming out of that phase. You'll also see that the next level below that is organized differently based upon which phase we're in. Perfectly normal. And of course, this is not a complete work breakdown structure. It's just the top two levels. On slide 21. This is deliverable oriented. This is the most common structure when you have a single phase of the project. As I mentioned when I went through this the first time, the bank logo has obviously been designed, reviewed, and finalized before we got this far. And here you can see that they've decided to organize the implementation effort according to the nature of the thing that the logo is being put onto. So we've got our print, and we got all the documents that the bank has to produce. This happened to be a Chinese bank that was fairly wealthy, so you see they had a couple of corporate jets, the signage over on the right, the billboards, the branches, the ATMs, and so on. The last one, last example, slide 22. This is procurement-oriented. This is my other category. Here where we're buying services. We're trying to define the work that we have to do. So we talked about vendor selection, vendor supervision, and final inspection, because that's what we will actually be doing. The vendor will be figuring out what actually has to be done. Excuse me. In order to remodel the office. The vendor may have their own WBS. Depending upon the contractual relationship, they might integrate it with ours. It would be here primarily on the vendor supervision and final inspection piece. All right. How do we use the WBS? First of all, the activities, the lowest level, become input to cost, to effort and cost estimating. They're also inputs to sequencing and scheduling. So figuring out how much effort is involved, how much the effort is going to cost, sequence what has to be done before what, and then the scheduling, assigning resources to specific items, and so on. So the activities are primary inputs for those detail aspects of the rest of the planning process. The deliverables technically don't have to be used at all, since the activities define all the work that makes up the deliverable. You could, in fact, toss the deliverables. Most of the time we don't. We use it for scheduling milestones or progress measurement points, but that's still an option. If I move on to slide 24, this is sort of my summary of what I call heterodoxy or some non-standard views. I think some of the standard views of the work breakdown structure, I don't really want to say wrong, but I think are focused on someone other than the project manager. So I'll start with the first item here on 24. There's no need for levels to have standard names. I know some of the project management software packages in the past, some have had specific names for specific levels. Personal opinion is I don't care. I want to know what the work is. Trying to force stuff into a particular structure just doesn't make sense to me. Same for the second bullet here. Each branch can have a different number of levels. I attended a conference sponsored by, I forget who it was. It was in D.C. It wasn't PMI. It was professional association related to government contracting. And there was a panel discussion about whether or not the standard for the WBS should be changed from having four levels to seven levels or 11 levels. And the first question that I asked myself was, well, what happened to 5 and 6 and 8, 9 and 10? How come those numbers of levels aren't in play? how do we go from 4 to 7 or 11? And there were discussions about what each one of those levels meant. And this was, I think, before I was very familiar with the old 881. And it didn't make any sense to me. I want detail to estimate. I want the work organized in a fashion that makes sense. I want to be able to assign responsibility for individual activities, preferably to a single person or at least somebody that I, as the project manager, can hold responsible for seeing that that work is done, for seeing that that deliverable is completed. And if you require your work breakdown structure to have the same number of levels along every branch, you either force yourself into proliferating branches or creating detail where it's not needed or not creating detail where it isn't needed. Third bullet, I see no reason not to mix activities and deliverables as long as the hierarchy is maintained. And the fourth point here I think is one of the most important. Still, an awful lot of the books on project management say develop a complete work breakdown structure, and that is only possible if you are dealing two circumstances. If you're dealing with a single phase of the project where someone else has completely defined the scope for you, as in construction, they've said, here is exactly what I want you to build, or it may be possible in some relatively trivial projects of a repetitive nature, fundraising activities or getting a magazine out where we do, in fact, know what has to be done in such detail that we can, in fact, define it at the beginning of the project because of our detailed knowledge, once again, of the scope. On slide 25, we've got a little bit of a checklist for you going through your work breakdown structure. Have you remembered to include the management work? If you look at the detail work items, do the lower levels fully describe the upper level? You look at the deliverables. Are the completion criteria evident? If somebody walked in and looked at your work breakdown structure, would they be able to tell you that a deliverable was done? Part of the reason for asking that question is if you have a long project, you may discover that when you come back to some parts of the work breakdown structure in 2 or 3 weeks, you haven't made those things clear, you won't remember what's going on. Are the activities small enough for a single person to be held accountable for its delivery? It doesn't mean that a single person has to do all of the work. It just means that you know who is responsible for seeing that this work gets done. And then the last item there, are the activities small enough to ensure accurate estimates? And I think the question earlier was from Dana. I recognized his voice. And this is basically what we're saying. If we can't estimate accurately, if somebody says, well, it might be 10 hours or it might be 200 hours, then that's probably an indication that we need more detail to help us understand where the uncertainty is. We may get rid of that detail later, but during the development of the work breakdown structure, we create it to help us. Help ourselves move forward. Slide 26 is a quick summary. In my opinion, there is no one right way to organize a work breakdown structure. There's at least three classic frequently used. Second bullet, do top down when it's something you understand, bottom up when it's something you don't. Third bullet, I like the acronym AWOW, all the work and only the work. And the fourth item I mentioned briefly, I really find Post-its an invaluable tool. Minor point, maybe, but I would also heartily recommend that you buy name brand Post-it notes. Some of the cheap ones that you can buy at Staples and other office supply stores are less expensive because the glue doesn't stick as well, and it can be incredibly annoying to come back from break or lunch and find 50% of your Post-its on the floor because they didn't stick to the wall or the whiteboard well enough. So those are my six steps. I'm now down to slide 27, which says, thanks for listening, and do you have any questions?
Thank you very much, Bill. If anybody would like to ask a question of Bill at this time, you can press star 6 on your phone to turn off mute. Yeah,
while people are doing that, this is Dana. I have one other question. You sort of mentioned levels in passing already, but I find a lot of discussion around WBSs to be focused on, well, you shouldn't have any more than 4 or 6, and but you have to have at least some other number. Any other rules of thumb, any other guidance on how many levels your work breakdown structure should have?
Yeah, my response to that is poppycock.
Yeah.
That's only because we're in a public sector or in a public forum. If I was speaking to you one-on-one, Dana, I'd probably use stronger language. I think what you're seeing is that the DoD standard normally has 4 levels, but the DoD standard is actually more targeted at a contractual work breakdown in terms of defining the information that the contractor and the level of information that the contractor is going to report to the owner on. So it's not a work breakdown structure that is targeted at satisfying the needs of the project manager. It's one that's targeted at satisfying the needs of the owner. So in those cases, the arguments about how many levels are really about how much detail is going to be reported and who's going to pay for reporting the detail. In terms of the project manager's need, I think that's completely irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
I've got a question. This is Judy. I come from marketing and, you know, launching new products and things like that. I understand phases in, you know, the entire project. When something is so complex, do you break the phases into separate projects, or what do you do?
Oh, lovely question. Correct answer, of course, is, if you were listening earlier, it depends. All right.
Yeah, now, I knew that was coming.
The question is, what does it depend on?
Mm-hmm.
Let me try and give you an answer to that. The more uncertain the completion of the later phases, the stronger my recommendation that you treat each individual phase as a separate project.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in marketing, you said you were in marketing?
Yep.
If we're doing new product development, I would almost always treat feasibility as a separate standalone phase, sometimes called the fuzzy front end.
Yeah,
and say the only commitment that this organization is making is to completing a feasibility study.
Uh-huh.
Once we've completed the feasibility study, we should know enough to decide whether we want to continue with further commitment to this product idea. Generally speaking, I like to see anything that looks like requirements be treated as a separate standalone project.
Mm-hmm.
If you try and mush requirements with design, what you usually find is that people will figure out part of what has to be done, and they'll get excited about it, and they'll start pushing that forward and trying to do design, development, creation work on it. You really haven't finished all of the requirements, and as you continue to push the requirements, you find a showstopper, and
mm-hmm.
you spend an enormous amount of money on stuff that shouldn't have been spent. If you had really finished the requirements first, you would have found the showstopper.
I see.
If you're in software development, some of what organizations are trying to do with agile software development these days is exactly that. Treat each iteration as a separate project.
Uh-huh.
So at the end of every iteration, you get useful working software that does in fact provide benefit to the organization. And if at any point the user doesn't see sense in continuing to invest in it, they can shut the project down and still have something that provides value.
Okay.
Did I answer your question?
Yeah, sort of. For a WBS, I know, you know, when I was doing process mapping, do
mm-hmm.
you try to keep it onto one page or two pages? I mean, you don't want to keep rolling it out.
WBS?
Yeah.
Well, I've had WBSs that covered 6 walls and 5 rooms.
Is that right? Wow.
I worked on a project a couple of years ago where a company was developing a manufacturing process. They were actually a subcontractor to the company that was actually going to market the product. But they had originally planned on having a plant that was to be operated by robots. They realized they couldn't get the robots designed and built in time, so they were going to have to do some manual assembly. So there was a team that was planning the design, development, manufacturing, installation of the tools to support the manual assembly line. There was another team that was doing the same for the robotic assembly line that was to be the long-term solution. There was a third team that was working with the primary vendor in terms of some interface issues, and I think the fourth team was dealing with some highly technical aspects of the work that had to be done in the two assembly lines. So we actually had four separate teams. I think the total WBS for that project was somewhere around 2,000, 2,200 activities.
Wow.
And I think my recollection is $10 or $11 million over about 18 months.
Mm.
This was a while ago, so that was real money then.
Yep.
A typical construction project. I've been doing a lot of work in the Middle East over the past couple of years. An upgrade to a oil drilling rig will almost always have at least 2,000 activities.
Hmm.
Here in Martin,
how do you manage?
You can get
how
away
do you manage
with
that?
Does that help?
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Anyone else? Just let me come back to that last question. I don't want to suggest that you have to have a large number of activities.
Okay.
I've also worked with lots and lots of clients where they had between, say, 100 or 150 activities, and I had one guy do a pretty darn good job of fairly detailed WBS for a hotel refurbished, when I was converting two apartment buildings to a hotel. And he had a pretty complete, pretty useful work breakdown structure that filled up about three charts of flip chart paper.
Mm-hmm.
Project that I think was going to be about $12 million over 2 years, more than that, $24 million over 2 years. So as many as you need is the right answer.
Okay. And the Microsoft project will be able to manage the 20-some thousand activities?
I am not a fan of Microsoft project. Microsoft project is generally fairly good for doing some rudimentary planning. It does not handle resources well.
Uh-huh.
Generally speaking, and if there's... as a general rule, it doesn't handle changes and updates well.
Right.
People who spend a lot of time with it tell me I'm crazy. And I think once you get good at it, you learn the idiosyncrasies so that you can deal with it. But for a beginner, it can be pretty awful.
Right. Okay.
Dana, do you use Project?
I use Project, but we also have been using TeamPlay, Primavera, few others as well. Depends on PPM. It depends upon the project. If it's hardware, if it's software, and who owns things. If you're in a company like I am in HP, we like to use eat our own food, if you will. So we tend to try to use our own products. Sometimes for the smaller things, Microsoft Project works fine. But we like to sort of smother it around. We don't have any one standard, as it turns out. It depends on where you are.
Do you think I'm being unfair to Microsoft Project?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. You listen to one of the radio shows of the Microsoft Project user group. They'll say the same thing. The guys there know the product well, and they will say that it has its strengths and it has its areas to require improvement. Not at all.
One of the real problems that I think all of the project management software has is that its heritage is in engineering and construction, really going back to the late 50s and early 60s when resources were elastic. Most of you, I'm guessing, are in what I call involved in what I call white-collar projects, where your primary resource is a white-collar professional, and in that environment, scheduling the resources and dealing with changes in resource availability and resource assignment is your primary issue. If I'm running a construction project, simply not an issue. I need a couple more plumbers. I call my plumbing contractor and say, hey, you're behind schedule. Put some more men on this and get it done. If I've got people doing highly specialized software development, it doesn't work because there may not be anybody else who can do it. Any other questions on the work breakdown structure?
Bill, this is Henry. I've been kind of listening part of the time, but not all the time, so maybe this question was asked, but and I know your answer about it depends, that's always one of my favorite sayings, too, you know, when you're a project manager, it depends, but when you talk about breaking down the work breakdown structure, to what level of detail would you say would be the lowest level of detail? I mean, a lot of times in the work that we do, which we're talking about projects that might last maybe 9 months in the current place that I'm involved, we'll break things down to, say, anything from, say, 3 days to 2 weeks worth of work, because we feel as though if we don't break it down to that level, it's, or at least when we move it over to the project schedule we do, because if we don't, we're not going to have enough detail to know what the progress is on that task or activity, as you like to call them.
I'm going to actually give you two slightly different but hopefully complementary answers to that question. In terms of the work breakdown structure, the direct answer to your question is you break it down until you have detail to estimate. And that means that you have a level of comfort that the duration and effort estimates that you're coming up with are in fact going to be reasonable. Now, once you start putting that into a software tool or even using Excel for tracking, my general rule of thumb is that the average duration, regardless of the number of hours, regardless of the amount of effort, the average duration should be equal to your reporting period. So if you're reporting weekly, the average duration for your activities should be a week, and no activity should be more than two reporting periods or 2 weeks. So when you say you end up breaking them down to, you know, maybe 3 days, no more than 2 weeks, I'm assuming you're reporting weekly, and that sounds to me like you've intuitively stumbled into what I think is appropriate for the right reasons. You don't want to let anything go more than two periods without knowing whether or not it's done. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, that's good. Unless I'm still on mute.
I mean, you may actually, while you're developing the WBS, you might actually create more detail than that in order to develop that level of comfort that you understand what's going on. But once you've got that additional detail, when you get into sequencing it and scheduling the work with resources, there's no reason why you can't roll it back up again for reporting and tracking.
I've also heard WBS as being said it's dynamic. It, you know, it evolves or it changes over time as you learn more going, you know, doing the front end and as you move forward.
Should evolve and change in two different ways.
Okay.
If you have multiple phases, is this the marketing person again?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
You probably don't know the work that has to be done in later phases. So
right.
Why kill yourself trying to populate a work breakdown structure when you know that what you're doing is fiction? So as you are working on the project and you're learning more about what has to be done, you will populate the work breakdown structure, maybe phase by phase. You might discover at some point after completing, you know, the second phase that you have an answer to something in the last phase of the project. So go ahead and populate the work breakdown structure there. On occasion, you will also find that you've made some mistakes As a result of that, you may want to modify the work breakdown structure the same as you'd modify any other aspect of your project plan. You'd want to exercise some change control over it. If you've got a large, complex project, there's no reason why you couldn't even submit the WBS to configuration management tools. It's all a question of how much money you want to spend for what level of control.
Mm-hmm.
But the WBS is not sacrosanct. It is a tool to help you plan and manage the project. And if the rules are getting in the way, then we violate the rules.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Sure. Anyone else? Okay, I got one last story for you. Maybe this will generate another question, but I'll tell it now anyway. Is there a question, or are you just going to close things up, Henry?
No, you know, I was going to ask you if you could talk, and why don't you tell your story, because I love to hear stories, but maybe you could talk just briefly about the Society for Advancement of Project Management.
Oh, okay, and thanks for the reminder.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I'll save the story for last. ASAPM, American Society for the Advancement of Project Management, is the U.S. member in IPMA, IPMA being the International Project Management Association. ASAPM offers performance-based credentials as well as the more traditional professional association kinds of things. We're still relatively small. Anybody interested in getting a chapter or community or practice going, my email is on that last slide there. Send me a note and I'll forward it to the appropriate person. What I like about ASAPM, if you look at our logo, we intentionally put the letters in lowercase to remind ourselves to be humble. We are, in my opinion, honestly trying to advance the profession or advance the discipline as opposed to simply building up our bank balance, although we may need to provide a little more focus on building our bank balance. I'm currently running the certification program. Certifications are performance-based, which means in order to get certified, you must provide evidence that you have, in fact, performed the role of project manager in a satisfactory fashion. One of the illustrations is one of our performance criteria is stakeholders are identified. So if I'm assessing Henry or Dana, I'm going to ask to see a list of their stakeholders. I'm going to ask how that list was developed. I'm going to ask why the people who are on it to verify that they not only did the right stuff, but that they understood what they're doing. We think that performance-based approach has a tremendous potential to increase the level of professionalism in the industry.
So is that certification process more of a one-on-one kind of thing, or is it an
It's actually a two-on-one.
Two-on-one, okay.
We gang up on you.
Cool.
It's about a two-hour interview. It typically takes about 4 to 6 hours to put the documentation together that provides the evidence. Fair amount of stuff on the website. There's also an organizational assessment that we call APRO for ASAPM Performance Rated Organization. It also focuses on specific performance criteria or outputs, so the emphasis is on results. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but to an extent, I don't care how you went about doing it. I care that you got the result that you were supposed to get. Now, clearly, some of those results are taking good care of your people, you know, doing the right thing from an ethical perspective. So it's not a there are controlling performance criteria to make sure that balance is maintained. But it's actually kind of a fun process. If anybody's interested, I'd be happy to talk to them about it. All right, I'll close with my story. The very first time I ever taught project management, I will not tell you how long ago it was, but it was here in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I was talking about, this was in the days before we had QRS projection and so on, so all of my slides were hand-created, and as a result, I had not written out work breakdown structure on the slide. It just said WBS. And I thought I had explained to everybody what the WBS was and that WBS was the abbreviation for work breakdown structure. But I either didn't explain it or didn't explain it clearly enough because I'm about halfway through my shtick on the particular slide, somebody in the back of the room raises their hand and says, I understand what the last two letters stand for, but what does the first one mean? And, well, I'm still trying to process that question. Somebody up in the front of the room kind of under their breath goes, wholesale. So I offer that as a closing thought for you tonight on the true meaning of W.
I love it.
Yep.
Well, I wanted everybody to know that Bill has graciously offered to be with us again for our PM Best Practices call in September of 2011. That's going to end up being the 15th of September, and he'll be talking about Project Risk. So we'll be looking forward to that. If you've enjoyed the call this evening, you'll enjoy listening to Bill again present to us on September the 15th on a subject of risk. So I hope that you all can tune in for that, and hopefully you'll tune in live because we like a lot of interaction on our calls. But if you can't, we're happy to have you listen in to the recordings and the podcasts. So, Bill, thank you very much for joining us this evening. We thank you for enlightening us on the subject of the six-step process to an effective WBS.
Now that you're very welcome.
WBS, now that we know what WBS stands for. And thank you for giving your time, and I especially appreciate you following through, even though you've got that post-nasal drip there that you're dealing with, and I heard you sneezing. I had myself on mute, and I said to my wife, oh, the poor guy, he's sneezing like every 10 seconds.
Well, it's actually just coughing, so it could be worse.
Thank you for sticking with it. And I thank you, too, George Schrader, for being on the call. That's a pleasant surprise to have our first success story for our PM Job Shop call. For those of you that are not already members, please join our group. You'll see the link on the left-hand side of our website, pmlessonslearned.com. Please tell others about our group, and you know, feel free to invite them to join. We also, you can follow us on Twitter at PM Lessons. You can also join our LinkedIn group. We have several ways that you could join in with the group and join in the discussion. We'd be happy to hear from you. So thank you very much for everybody tuning in. I appreciate those that chimed in on the call and asked questions and comments. It's always appreciated to have that dynamic aspect of our call, and we hope more people will be able to join us live. Thank you, Dana, for helping out with putting the call together this evening. I was in the car at the time. I've been running all over today, so I appreciate you helping out with making sure that we posted the presentation online there. And thank you to all of you that are part of our group. I mean, we're more than 2,000 people. We're located around the world. We're an international group at this point. And thank you for being a part of our group. We'd be happy to have you volunteer with us. So as I always end our calls, thank you very much for joining us. God bless you all, and keep on learning.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been a PM Lessons Learned podcast. Project Managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Come join our group. Visit our website at pmlessonslearned.com. Till next time, keep on learning.